All right, I'd like to call to order our July 1st, 2026 meeting of the Ventura Port District Board of Commissioners. We'll start with pledge. Chief Higgins, would you lead us, please?
Raise your hand in regard. Ready to begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Could I get a roll call, please?
Commissioner Anderson?
Here.
Commissioner Rainey?
Here.
Vice Chair Hall?
Here.
Chair Boomerberg?
Here.
And Commissioner Stevens will be absent today.
Move on to adopt the agenda for tonight. Commissioners, any thoughts on tonight's agenda?
I move to adopt the agenda.
And a second.
Okay, I've got a motion and a second to adopt the agenda as presented. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none opposed, we've adopted tonight's agenda as presented.
I move that we approve the minutes as published.
And I'll second it.
So I got a motion and a second to approve the meeting minutes from our June 17th meeting. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
I will abstain from that vote, but it sounds like we've got unanimous approval. Otherwise, no hearing on that. No no's. All right, we'll move on to public communications and opportunity for the public to testify on items that are not on tonight's agenda. We've got one speaker card. Andrew, you've joined us a couple of times. Appreciate whenever you come back, because usually it's good news.
Yeah, I just wanted to provide the Port District with a quick update from Pokaloa. So for those who don't know me, my name is Andrew Berner, and I'm the secretary of Pokaloa Outrigger Canoe Club. And I just really wanted to share the immense success that we had with our race, as well as our youth programs that we've been developing over the past few years. So we had a really fantastic race on June 12th. It was possibly one of the best races we've ever had in our 37-year history. We had one of the biggest turnouts, and all the feedback that we've received so far has been great. I think it was an economic boom for the harbor, I hope, just with the number of people that we brought in. We had great conditions on the water, and we really dove into the cultural components of outrigger canoe paddling. We began with a really meaningful race blessing, honoring the connection between our shores and the Channel Islands. And then on the beach, we had a cultural village that featured hula, ukulele music, and traditional lay making. And then that evening, we followed it up with a performance from the Kalama Brothers, who are a popular Hawaiian rock and soul musical group. And they were on the village green, so it was just a big day, and we were really excited about it. And we just want to point out the marketing team, because they really helped to pull that off with us. And then beyond the race weekend, we've continued to build on our youth development and outreach program. This spring, we provided 5 paddling sessions to students from Santa Paula High School, Blaina High School, and Elmhurst Elementary. In each one of those sessions, we hosted between 30 to 60 historically underserved students. And one of them included a special needs program, and they were really excited about the local harbor wildlife that they got to encounter. And then 4 of these sessions were in partnership with the Marino Foundation, who both provided transportation, and then they also focus on marine science education. So looking ahead, we've partnered once again with the California State Parks Lifeguard or Junior Lifeguard Program, and we focus on teaching the history as well as outrigger canoe paddling. And this year we have 6 sessions across 6 different weeks with approximately 75 kids per program. So it's really successful. So really, just on behalf of the club, I want to thank everybody at the harbor, the staff from maintenance to operations to marketing, and then to all of you as the Port District for really making the harbor a great place to recreate and educate and have a sense of community. So thank you very much.
Yeah, Andrew, thank you for coming tonight. Thank you for that update. You know, I think about the board's job, right? We're supposed to represent the community and kind of do some oversight to make sure that we're living up to our mission, safe, navigable harbor. You guys are doing a great community service, so I appreciate you catching us up on that. Keep up the great work.
Thank you very much.
All right. right. Other public communications? Seeing nobody in the audience, how about online?
Nobody online, but we had an email come in from Noble Crawford Security, who is our current security vendor for the district, and they shared their annual performance report.
Yeah, very positive report, so thank you for sharing that. All right, we will close the public communications. We'll move on to closed session report. Council?
Chair Blumenberg, members of the board met in closed session to discuss the two items on the agenda. The board gave instructions to staff, and no reportable action was taken under the ground.
Thank you. All right, we'll move on to board communications, an opportunity for commissioners to give brief reports on court-related issues and activities. Anybody? Tony?
I just wanted to commend getting the Noble Guard security report for people who are wondering about security and safety with the port. I would encourage everyone interested to read it, because not only did they give 11 separate items of what has occurred and preventative measures, but also I love on the very back it has key performance achievements showing what we've done. I'm used to having security reports where people basically just said, "Well, we didn't, nothing bad happened," but nothing as pretty comprehensive as this. So I want tenants and vendors and contractors and customers and clients that use the port to know they are in a safe place.
Well said. Jessica, this letter from Noble Guard that will be available on the website, is that true?
Yes, it will.
Yeah. All right, great. Thank you. All right, no other comments from the commissioners. We'll close board communications. Start with our staff, general manager reports. Brian, over to you.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I've got some items from our marketing team regarding upcoming 4th of July celebration and other activities. So with that, join Ventura Harbor Village as we celebrate the 250th anniversary of the United States with two afternoons of live music, waterfront dining, shopping, and coastal fun. Enjoy 250 minutes of live music each day from noon to 4:10 p.m. on July 3rd and 4th at the Seaside Promenade Stage and in the Channel Islands Courtyard. Followed by live bands at various village restaurants in the evening as well. Chalk artist Randall Williams will be on site on Friday, July 3rd in front of La Petite Cafe and Bakery in the city of Ventura. We'll also have a booth on Friday, July 3rd along the village promenade, which includes a patriotic photo backdrop, fun giveaways, and festive activities alongside the afternoon's live entertainment. Separately, to celebrate its first anniversary, Golden Hour Goods at the Village is hosting an anniversary celebration on July 4th and 5th from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m., filled with creativity, special guests and sales, free crafts, face painting, mini portrait sessions, and more. All are invited to come shop, create, and enjoy. Seaside Movie Nights at Ventura Harbor Village were just announced as Saturday, August 22nd. With the 25th anniversary of Shrek. Is that right? 25th anniversary of Shrek? God, I feel older and older. All right. And on Saturday, I feel like my kids were just watching that. On Saturday, September 19th, rather, with the 40th anniversary of Ferris Bueller's Day Off. That should be fun. Movies start at sunset. Be sure to mark your calendars. That's what I have for you tonight.
So that kid that was just watching Shrek a week ago had just bought a house. Huh?
That's right. That's right. That's almost a quote from Ferris Bueller's Day Off, actually. Good tie-in.
All right. We'll close our staff and general manager reports, move on to the consent agenda. Consent agenda is typically non-controversial. All items voted on in one fell swoop. Tonight we got three items. Award of a bid for janitorial supplies, approval of a new retail lease with Island Packers, and then termination of the current lease with Buena Art Association. That sets up the art association for more good things, right? So, commissioners, Brian, no comments on the consent agenda?
No, no. I'll hear if there's any questions.
All right, commissioners, assuming no questions, comments?
I move that we approve the consent agenda.
A second.
I've got a motion and a second to approve the consent agenda as presented. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none opposed, we've approved all three items on the consent agenda. All right, we'll move on to our standard agenda. First item up is the sand management plan. Brian, I'll turn it over to you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. Jessica, is Robert Smith on?
Yes.
Okay, great. I'm going to have Special Legal Counsel Robert Smith give the presentation. I'll have a couple of thoughts to add when he concludes. Thank you.
Thanks, Brian. Good evening, everybody. So this is an update on our continued efforts to approve the sand management plan through a coastal development permit issued by the Coastal Commission. The last time we presented to the board, we went through a number of different alternatives and decided on a plan to include the relocation of certain volleyball courts as well as the rest of the sand management plan. Since that time, we've been in discussion with the Coastal Commission staff as to how to do that, as well as continued conversations with a number of different stakeholders in volleyball interests and others that are very interested in how that sand management program is going to be implemented. Unfortunately, while we thought we had reached resolution of the sand management plan and received final approval from Coastal Commission staff a couple of months ago, and we're just going through a couple of wordsmithing items. Last month, the Coastal Commission staff got back to us and demanded for the first time that we submit a specific plan detailing exactly the exact layout, orientation, et cetera, of the proposed volleyball courts, including things like hours of operation, when they would be operated, et cetera. We responded that, really that's not the Port District's role, that, those are all done pursuant to licenses with a variety of volleyball interests, and similar to how the Port District has managed those operations for quite some time. Those would be done pursuant to specific license and in collaboration with those volleyball interests. At that point, the Coastal Commission staff was unwilling to issue the larger coastal development permit, and basically conditions that approval upon submission of additional details and plans concerning the volleyball courts. That led to me first writing a letter from K&L Gates on behalf of the Port District through a process under the California Coastal Act regulations, basically arguing that we don't believe that the interpretation that has been forwarded by Coastal Commission staff and holding up the permit conditioned upon further details with the volleyball courts was consistent with the way that the Coastal Commission approved the project and the conditions of approval that were approved in the May hearing last year. So that process requires us to first bring that to the attention of the executive director, which we did. We wrote a letter to Dr. Hucklebridge. Kate Hucklebridge is executive director of the Coastal Commission, asking her determination as to whose interpretation of the conditions was correct. We found out, I believe it was early last week, that the executive director sided with Coastal Commission staff, identifying that she believes that a plan was required, and again reiterated staff's request for that plan and holding off on issuance of the CDP pending additional information from the Port District. When that happens, when things aren't able to be resolved at the executive director level, then it is escalated to the Coastal Commission. And so last week, the Coastal Commission agendized the item to be heard next Wednesday. Thankfully, that hearing is in Ventura, which, unlike the previous hearing, last May, which is Half Moon Bay. This is much closer to home. Therefore, it would hopefully ensure a greater opportunity for public participation in person. A couple of things to note about the staff report. Specifically, it deals with the dispute resolution item that we brought to the attention of the executive director. So specifically, it's going to deal with whether or not the coastal development permit can be issued without any further action from the port district. Our argument is we've met all the conditions as written in the coastal development permit. And once you meet those conditions, staff doesn't have any authority to continue to hold up the permit for additional concessions, because that's beyond the scope of staff's authority. That's really the authority of the Coastal Commission themselves to issue conditions of approval. That's the question that's going to be before the commission next Wednesday, which is whether or not the commission agrees that the CDP should be issued immediately and that the board district has met all the conditions of approval, or sides with staff to agree that some further definition of the volleyball court issue remains to be considered. We did have a good discussion with the executive director yesterday, as well as the district director, Steve Hudson. We voiced our concerns, including our demands that we feel that we've bent over backwards to accommodate the Coastal Commission's interests here, including relocation of the courts, as well as the proposed mitigation for previous activities associated with the volleyball installation of the volleyball courts. And we don't believe that anything more is needed. I would say it was a productive discussion. It didn't result in any sort of resolution of the issues. But nevertheless, I think it was a helpful conversation to talk about these things with the executive director herself. As of right now, we do plan to go back to the Coastal Commission at their hearing next Wednesday. I'll be present there as well as a number of people from the district, including, Brian, and also our environmental consultant, Derek Lerma, from RENCON, to present these issues for the Coastal Commission's consideration. Separately, as it relates to the volleyball courts, we've been adamant throughout, and consistent throughout our public communications, that we believe that the best result would be the retention of the courts in their existing and current location. Obviously, that was not something that the commission agreed to last May when we requested that. There have been ongoing conversations between the district staff as well as the commission staff and a variety of volleyball interests. We had a discussion with some of those interests yesterday, talking about what would really work for ongoing and continued utilization of the courts by a variety of volleyball interests. And we got some definition as to sort of the operational logistical difficulties there. We anticipate that they'll also be at the hearing next week to voice their concerns directly to the Coastal Commission. Again, I think that those conversations were very productive. But the Coastal Commission has noted in their staff report, and it's correct, that the resolution of the volleyball issue is not on the agenda next week. It's purely whether or not we should be, the district should be issued its coastal development permit. So, while those discussions are ongoing, I would anticipate that those will continue even after next Wednesday as we try to resolve those in a way that works for the volleyball community and the district. And so with that, I know Brian's got a couple of additional comments, but I'm available to answer any questions.
Thank you, Robert. Yeah, just as a follow-up, I did have a conversation with the executive director, Kate Huckleberg, late this afternoon. So I would just offer that dialogue continues between the Port District and the Coast Commission, which is a good thing. Hopefully we can continue to work towards resolution of the issuance of the sand management permit. So, with that, I think we'll turn to the board for questions.
All right. Commissioners, questions, comments? This is a receive and file in preparation for the meeting next Wednesday, but opportunity for us to ask questions. Tony?
I guess disappointment by the lack of clarity by the commission and completeness. If there was something else in more detail that we needed to do, it should have been so stated more clearly. I think
I don't know. When I saw that, it's like, okay. But in order for you to get to go and have this approved, there's a checklist. Most regulatory agencies, Fed, basically was required to get you that. It was very rare that you got caught with, oh, well, you didn't do this, that, or the other. It was like by federal regulation, you had to, this is what we need from you before we take the next step in terms of review and approval. It seems to me that it was either not clear or not complete, and it just strikes me that every step that we take for compliance, something else comes up, and I just think that's unfortunate.
Yeah, if I can chime in on that, I think after last year's meeting, Coastal Commission staff issued a memo. We noted that that memo was incorrect, and we've been working, Brian, for months, right, to get them to correct that.
14 months
now. So, yeah, you're right. Not only have they did they inaccurately capture the direction, they have been moving the goalposts ever since. So, understand that perspective. Other thoughts?
I think we're getting close. I applaud the work that staff and Robert Smith and GreenCon consultant have been doing to move this forward. I'm hopeful that we'll be able to have a sand management permit here by the meeting or shortly and get this all resolved.
Yeah, I remember months ago in spring seeing some pictures of other Southern California beaches getting cleaned up of all the debris from the winter storms, and we were kind of handicapped there. So it's long overdue that we get the permit. Brian, question for you. The volleyball community, right, I understand the bigger picture that this is really about our sand management plan, but the volleyball has been an incremental part of that. Volleyball community has been pretty vocal. Has the word gotten out that we are on the agenda for next Wednesday? Will the volleyball community represent themselves at those meetings?
Yes. Even though Robert is correct, technically, the issue, I think, before the board, correct me if I'm wrong, Robert, is the sand management permit issuance, because this has been such a significant issue related to the sand management permit. It certainly provides them the opportunity to represent their concerns and interests. I will say that they have made clear to us they have evaluated the alternative area that we, after going through all of those analyses, they firmly believe that only four courts can fit within that that let's call it secondary area that is further south on Harbor Cove Beach.
And who is they?
This is the LAVA organization who's been operating at Harbor Cove Beach for some period of time. So we have correspondence from them, plus a phone call with them yesterday as well on the topic. So from their perspective, the site that's been identified as a alternative site can accommodate volleyball, but not six courts, not eight courts, but four courts. That is their position, and they made that clear to us, and they'll make that clear to the Coastal Commission as well.
All right, so the community has got the word. We expect the community will be out in force next Wednesday. How about other local leadership, city leadership, county leadership? I know they've been monitoring the issue. Do we expect any of them to attend?
Well, I think, Jessica, is it next Tuesday that we have an update with City Council?
Yes.
So I think as part of our update to council, which would include the vice chair, the chair, Todd, myself, and Jessica will be helping us with putting together a presentation. But we certainly should use that opportunity in front of the City Council to advise them of whatever the status is as of that day.
Yeah, that would be a good opportunity. Good timing.
Yeah.
All right. Commissioners, any other comments, questions? Robert, I appreciate your steady hand on that, on the tiller here, and hopefully, you know, I think it was appropriate that about a month or two ago we escalated this. It's time to make a decision. So I think escalating it to the board, getting on the agenda, appreciate your help in that, and look forward to next week.
Maybe we can get this thank you. Good as always to see everybody.
All right. Thank you. All right. We will close standard agenda item number one. Again, that was a receive and file the update.
Did we do public comment?
Good catch. Thank you. Any public comments in the room? Seeing none. How about public comments online? None online. All right. No public comments on that, so we'll close that. We'll move on to our agenda item number two, which is acceptance of the fiscal year 24-25 audit.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sarah Clancy is traveling for work and is in Chicago, but I believe she is joining us this evening, as is Bob Callanan, who is also not able to be here, but I think both are online and have some slides that I think they want to share as part of their presentation. So with that, Sarah, are you going to start off?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Thank you.
So we are presenting the final 2025 audit today. The first slide is kind of what we went over for the draft audit, including the bottom bullet point that it is still draft at that time because it had to undergo a second review by CLA. And so we are now on the final audit because it has underwent that final review. Next slide, please. So basically the outcome of the second review didn't show any findings around net income or net position. So the net position from the draft audit has not changed. Neither has our revenues or expenses. Next slide, please. There were a few non-monetary, essentially, changes that happened. One is a change in our statement of cash flows for cash pays for goods and services. In the first little snippet, you can see what was presented in the draft audit. And in the second snippet, you can see the change and what is presented in the final audit. This were adjusted to account for non-cash capital-related accounts payable of $560,000. Next slide, please. As you can see, this is a continuation of that same item, and you can see it's affected by that same dollar amount of $559,976 in the second snippet here, and how it changed from the first snippet of the draft audit to the second snippet of the final audit. Next slide, please. The final change for the final audit from the draft audit is our notes. Specifically around capital assets, and this is to be in compliance with GASB 34 and 104, where we had to note out way more detail of what these accumulated depreciating assets were. Oh, I'm sorry, we should be on the next slide. Jessica, are you on the slide with capital assets?
Yeah.
Yes, is it frozen on your side?
Yeah, it must be frozen. Okay, I got a feeling. Okay, so you can see here that the draft audit had one line and just for amortization, and the final audit, it has the same bottom line number, but it has all the detail in those lines. And so that's the gist of what has changed from the draft audit to the final audit. The other thing that's not kind of presented here is management discussion and analysis, and that's the part we do on our side at VPD once the financial statements are completed. And so that is included in your board packet today. So nothing has really changed on the MD&A from when I wrote it to when CLA had their second review of the audit to finalize. But it did change from what was in the draft. In the draft copy, it was kind of all highlighted yellow because we had to still write it. So Bob is here if there are any questions that he can help me answer. But that is our final audit for fiscal year 25.
All right, Sarah, thank you for that update. Let me, before I turn it over to the board, let me ask for any public comments on this. Seeing no one in the room, how about online? Any public comments online? No public comments online. So we'll close public comments on this item. Tony, let me start with you as our audit liaison. Any thoughts on this final?
Yeah, Bob, can you give everyone some context as to the GASB pronouncement that we had to go back and do the capitalized assets?
Yes. Good evening. Can everybody hear me okay?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Just want to make sure. Thank you. Just get the recommendation from the second review process was the level of detail in the notes as it relates to accumulated depreciation by asset classification. So in the prior years and the draft that was before you earlier in June, we just had the one line item that's on the slide that has been presented to you. They want more details so that a reader can see what the net book value is of a particular asset classification. So the actual capital assets themselves were detailed by these same line item categories. For instance, building and structures gave you a number of what the cost of acquiring and constructing the building and structures was at a point when they were originally acquired and purchased and constructed, and you couldn't tell how much depreciation amortization related to that particular asset classification. So they were just asking for a little more detail. In total, the numbers do not change anywhere else. It's just more detailed information on the front of the financial statements where you have capital assets subject to depreciation and capital assets that are not subject to depreciation.
And I just want to point out that staff this year had to accommodate this new detail that was not present before. So
that's correct.
Yeah. Okay. Another question I have on the attachment to the schedule proportionate share of net pension liability. I believe that is I looked at I don't know if we can pull it up on attachment to
page 64.
Looking at the one, two, three, fourth line down, schedule of proportionate share of net pension liability, and it's been going down. In 2022, it was at 90%. Then in 2023, it was 200%. Then in 2024, it was 196%. To give context, in 2025, it's 181%. What does that mean? It means the district owes roughly $1.81 in unfunded pension obligation for every dollar. I raise that because when we're looking at UAL pensions and probably with OPEB in the future, that we may want to consider coming up with a policy or something on that. So I'm just raising that for the board to remember. The other thing was the uncorrected items. In attachment one, page 45 on the packet, there were
Can I interrupt you? Let's go back to this OPEB. So you're raising it to the board for our future consideration. Every year we get the, we kind of get the update, and we're presented with different options, and then we, the general manager makes a decision on how to budget for that. Are you suggesting we change that approach? Or?
It's not the approach, but I think that perhaps we should have staff provide us with a policy as about our strategy for that in terms of, because on just on the UAL, on the pension plan, in 2022 I saw it 90%, and then in 2023 it goes to 200%.
Jessica Roush is muted.
Yeah. I think that...
I got it.
As a board, as a commissioner, I look at it and basically, oh, you know, should we put more money into it or shouldn't we? That's not for me to decide. What is the governance on that as to, one, do we have any thresholds or targets or anything like that, that staff could come to the board and say, if we see the number going up or down, then this is what we're going to do and recommend. The numbers are what they are. The cause and effect are what they are. But I just think that I'm always concerned about pensions because they affect employees now and particularly in the future. But I just think that it should be something that we have more of a, as we do with the dredging and putting money in there. We say at this percent because we want to make sure that whatever happens, we have enough money to dredge. I think we should do that so that, particularly for pensions, it doesn't get to a point where we have to do it. CalPERS is doing pretty well now. That's great. I've lived through them not doing very well and coming back to us and we having to pay. And the trouble is that when you go to a governing body and start explaining that to them and then say, well, how come you didn't know about this? I think it would behoove us to have a policy to at least tell us these are the drivers of it and this is what the impact would be. Because ultimately, this comes out of your the pensions. Some years it doesn't do it, some years it does. So I was just looking at these numbers, and from 2022 it was 90.4%, in 2023 it went to 200%. Is this something that the district did? Not necessarily, but I think it would behoove the commission to know that because of what happened with CalPERS, we get an explanation of that. Because it's gone from 200% in 2023 to 181% in 2025. So it's basically, so it's a 15.59 increase over June 30th of 2024. Little things like that. I was very satisfied with the audit and the audit results. I think our staff had a challenge coming in, particularly this year, of picking up the ball in the audit, you know, coming on board, having to do this. And the reason why I asked about the audit changes is because she and the auditors had to now come in there and do a detail of the your amortization and your depreciation that was never done before. So I recognize the challenges that have occurred. I think they, our staff and the auditors, met the challenge. I just think that we perhaps in the future would need some developing some type of policy framework that the board can consider to give us something to do with that. And I've talked it over with legal counsel, too, about such things. I want to move to approve the audit as presented, but I also wanted to add some things that I'd like to see. My primary concern is this, is that this is 2024. 2025 is just ended last month, so we're going to have a new audit. And what was concerning me during the budget process, too, is my ending fund balance. Where did we finish? Do we have audited financial statements? Which was a challenge, again, to staff of saying, okay, these numbers and things are going to change because, we've got to get the audit done. So I'd like to first move the board accept the financial statements and supplementary information with the independent auditor's report for the year end, June 30th, 2025, prepared by Clifton Larson, Allen LLP.
Okay, you covered a lot of ground there, but you did make a motion to accept the audit as presented.
Yes.
So let me see if we have a second on that motion.
I second that.
Bill, you have a comment before we take a vote?
Just one clarification question, if I could, before
you. Please.
So, I'm just, help me understand property tax revenues. If I look at the pie charts and what you're telling me, even though our property tax revenues from 24 to 25 increased by $96,880, it wasn't enough relative to the lease revenues that would otherwise have stayed the same share, if you will, of the pie, because it looks like it went down by a percent. Am I reading that, getting that correctly?
I can speak on that. No, it's not that our property tax revenues decreased as a whole from what we received. You're correct, it did go up by that $96,000. The difference is, as we've received a very large, almost $3 million one-time appreciation rent in fiscal year 25 for the assignment of Safe Harbor Marina. And so that kind of skewed the percent in what we got from our leases versus the taxes. And since the taxes are only around 12% of our total revenue, that larger jump in leases will make taxes look like a smaller percent in our overall revenue.
Okay, that adds up. That, I think we're saying the same thing.
Yeah.
So last question, just so I know, what is our pro rata share, rate share of those property taxes? And I'm assuming that share hasn't changed from year to year. Is that the percentage? Mm-hmm.
Right, and Brian might be able to remember the numbers specifically, but we are guided by certain rules where we're not allowed to ask for more of a share or less of a share in property tax revenues according to, and Brian, please help me out here, the Marina Code?
No, can you maybe clarify your question for me?
No, the question was what is our percent or our share that we get back from the city from the property tax paid that goes to this piece of the pie?
Sure. Property taxes actually come by way of the county.
Okay.
So, for each taxing area, right, you'll have city and county and schools and special assessments and so on. I don't have our exact percentage. I'll get it for you. It doesn't change. It's the same.
It doesn't change. As you know, it's consistent with other parts of the county? Are we getting fair?
I think it would really depend on each district is so different. You have park and rec districts in some communities and others you don't. For those of you who have attended some of our at Turk County Special District Association. We got everything from park and rec to water districts and so on. So that breakout of that pie is going to be different in every community, but ours has been consistent.
And just for ballpark, what roughly does that amount?
So we're getting about $1 million.
$1.9 million.
So we're up to. So usually it's about 10 to 12% of our operate. Excuse me. 10 to 12% of our revenue.
No, I'm asking of the taxes paid into the county.
I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. The source we can get it from is the Ventura County ACFR, and then they have a little chart on there for every dollar that is paid, then it goes to the county treasurer's office, and they actually it goes to the state, and then the state distributes it to the county, and then the county breaks it up by park district, harbor district, whatever. We can get that for you, but it's all centralized in the county, and the county distributes it with us.
So do you mean you across the entire county? Like if what is $1.9 million against all property taxes collected in the county of Ventura?
No, I'm saying if you're another district or entity in the county,
yeah,
is it comparable?
It would be hard because every district was formed at a different time for a different purpose with a different, you know, tax share. So it would be...
And last stupid question... You said it goes county, state. Yeah. That doesn't give us any leverage as we're trying to work through things like the land management plan and so on.
Well, I think with the state, I mean, Todd and I just came from CSDA conference yesterday and the day before, and I can tell you CSDA is working very diligently to make sure that the state doesn't reallocate taxes in ways that hurt the special districts in California. That doesn't mean adding more money, but sort of protecting our backyard, because there are a number of interesting proposals to reallocate property taxes to do different things, like high-speed rail, for example.
Okay, I understand. Thanks.
I might be able to help a little bit here. I don't know Ventura County, but I know Los Angeles County, and in that case, it depended on... The starting point was how much taxes you got when Prop 13 was passed, which... basically froze that, and they—that's only the beginning, but that's where they started.
All right, I'm going to go back to the motion and the second that we had. That was consistent with the agenda in front of us, which is to accept the financial statements and supplementary information. So, all in favor of that motion, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none. We've approved and accepted the financial statements. Now, I believe I'm still within the grounds of this agenda. I don't want to go back to the question that Commissioner Rain raised about in the future, what do we do about CalPERS? And I suggest that idea isn't formulated enough to have a vote or an action. But what I'd like to do is suggest that, General Manager, we schedule a meeting in the next month to just try to better understand Commissioner Rainey's concern and recommendation, maybe an offline meeting with yourself, Commissioner Rainey, Sarah, and either the Vice Chair and myself.
Sure, happy to do that.
And then we can figure out, is this an action that we should bring back to the Board to vote on in the near future? Does that sound reasonable?
That sounds very reasonable. And then one more thing, because... Fiscal year 25-26 just ended yesterday, so
Happy New Year.
Happy New Fiscal Year. So we've got an audit, the 25-26 audit coming up. So I'd also like to look at getting an audit timeline and for the commission to be apprised as to where we are, so that we can get the report, we can get our numbers earlier than we did.
Yeah, I think as you noted, there was a learning curve this year, partly staff changes, but partly process changes, partly law changes. And so I suspect a lot of those lessons have been learned, and we'll be ahead of the curve next year. And so I'm not necessarily inclined to ask for a timeline, but I think keeping the board apprised of audit progress, audit milestones is certainly appropriate.
Sure. Happy to do that.
For the board, just so you're aware, the next meeting, July 15th, we are requesting already, or way earlier than last year, the appointment of an audit liaison from the board. So you'll be seeing that next month, next meeting.
And then, Sarah, did we also, and Jessica would know this as well, did the board already take action on the contract with the audit firm?
Yes, the board approved the PSA last meeting, and so we're writing everything up so that we can hit the floor running. And that not only includes the audit, but also the additional department that CLA assists us with for GASB 87 and 96, which are really big things to do with our leases and how we amortize those. So we get that assistance first. Jessica Snidus, who's in the audience today, she assists me in gathering all our lease information for the year to make sure that we can get that rolling even sooner than last year to make sure we can meet we're essentially scheduling a audit kickoff meeting in early September internally.
Commissioner, any of your reaction to an audit kickoff in early September?
Oh, that's great. I just wanted to say with Clifton Larson, goodbye to our friend who helped us this year.
Oh, yeah. Well, thank you very much. I'm not going to be I'm not going to be too far away. I will be proceeding on and with the goal of wrapping up the 26 audit before the end of the year.
Thank you.
All right. We're good on this topic. All good. All right. All right. We will close agenda item number 2, our audit. Sarah, thank you for joining us from
Chicago. I was just at the GFOA conference, the annual conference, which is the Government Finance Officer Association conference. So I learned a lot about some new GASB rules coming up. And then finally, I just want to thank Commissioner Rainey again for all his assistance in this year, fiscal year 25 audit.
Yeah, thank you, Tony, and thank you, Bob, for all the good support. So, all right, we will move on to our, and Brian, you got the action to schedule that meeting.
I do. Did we take public comment?
Yeah.
Yes, we did.
Okay. Yes. I wasn't sure since there was another part of the dialogue, but
yeah, we did that earlier, and there was no public comment. All right, we'll move on to our last item, which is a presentation on Fathomwerx. So I'm looking forward to this. Brian, over to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Tonight, I'd like to introduce Steve Kinney, someone I've known for quite a long time. In economic development circles. Steve's going to talk to us tonight about the Fathomwerx Proving Ground and his company, Innovation Technologies Consortium. Steve?
Thank you, Brian. Just press the button at the base of the mic. Perfect. Technology I can handle. I love it. Yeah. Commissioners, good evening. I'm Steve Kinney. I'm the president of Innovation Technologies Consortium, and I'm here to try and demystify that company name. It pertains to the operation of the Fathomwerx Proving Grounds, which brings us home to the harbor here. So while I'm happy to talk about the consortium, a nonprofit corporation set up to be the sort of structure within which the Proving Ground operates, I'm happy to do that at length. I suspect that your interest is more focused on what happens here in Ventura Harbor with respect to what we're bringing to it. So I'll focus on the proving ground tonight, And I just would like to just try and make you aware of what we do and where we're going with it. To start with, we are a subtenant of Suntex. We originally signed a lease with Leonora on March 1st of this year. So we've been in the harbor since March. That lease is a two-year lease with a year's possible extension. So it's a pretty good amount of time that we look forward to being here and contributing to the overall well-being of the harbor. Do I have to ask you, Jessica, to advance the slide? Yeah, please. So, what is Fathom Works Proving Ground? I would say in my words, before we get to the details there, Fathom Works Proving Ground is, we operate it as a platform of both physical facilities and services, all directed toward small companies which have a need to carry out real-world testing of new products that they are developing. So they're very, very often related toward military, and particularly the Navy in this area, but not restricted to that. So that really any technology which opens a new door toward new kinds of equipment out in agricultural fields, or which opens a door toward new medical procedures in our local hospitals, anything that requires real-world testing, we aim to provide the means by which small companies can carry that out. There is, as you all know, a very large testing range nearby. It's operated by the Navy. It's the Point Magazine Range. It's the best in the world, without question. We like to think of ourselves, and have communicated with those operators as such, that we're sort of a feeder operation into that level of testing, which is the highest level possible. So we're more oriented toward companies that are getting a start in the world, that have sort of beginning needs for testing at a lower, less sophisticated level than the Navy range provides and requires. So we are, as it says, a public offshore operating area. We support either aerial or maritime, theoretically underwater operations as well. We maximize field time. That is, make it the most productive for companies to spend their time out on the water during the day, not messing around with logistics back at the dock. We're flexible with single day, multi-month, anything in between, or small and large. A menu of different services. We try and customize what we provide so that it matches just what the companies need, and not more than that, so they're not paying for superfluous activity on our part. And we operate year-round, thanks to the blessing of the weather here in the area. Go ahead. Well, we offer a local footprint, so that we are able to, through our local connections, take care of sort of bureaucratic stuff, leases, contracts, insurance. We try and do the heavy lifting there and provide sort of blanket permissions or coverages as needed, so that an individual company coming in doesn't have to carry that load every single time by itself. The service ecosystem, that's why we're set up as a nonprofit, because it's easier to reach out into the community and touch other institutions that these companies can benefit from, but they're not directly related to. Hotels, partnerships, repair facilities, those sorts of things. And then the operational structure is both logistics, we have airspace as well, and a lot of emphasis on safety procedures throughout. Go ahead. You don't have to read all that. I just want to put it up to say that our team is highly experienced in the kind of work that they do. They've all been through the traces with past experience, both official, getting their own permits and certificates for their individual talents, and then also working on projects that are similar to what the services that we're providing. Go ahead. Okay, this is kind of where it gets a little easier to relate to. This is the area that we're operating in and shows the features that I think are of most interest here. You can see the little label for Ventura Harbor, and you can see how close it is to the 5x5 nautical mile scalable operations box. That's the patch of water on which boats that are located here in the harbor go out to spend their day doing what they do, to run their equipment, to test their software, do the kinds of things that they need to try and validate the work that they've put into their equipment. So there's that operations box. It's not a fixed boundary entity. It's arbitrary, it's movable, but it just shows you the general area in which these boats typically operate. The other labels are just for your interest. At the bottom, it shows where the Navy's sea range is with the heavy red boundary to it, and then the other Channel Islands Harbor as well, and the fairgrounds, which I'll get to in a minute. So I think we can go ahead. We have a license with the City of Ventura to make use of the radio tower that's up on top of the hill above Sarah Cross. So that's an important part of the whole network. That's high enough up that it provides direct line-of-sight radio communication to that whole area out on the water that I just showed you. The city's been very cooperative in working with us on installing those facilities. Okay. So, here we are in Ventura Harbor. This is, frankly, the heart of the Fathomworks Proving Ground, or FPG, operations right now. Go ahead. And from the overhead, you can see we're located at the area where Tom Director has his boatyard and the Dockworks building and restaurant building next to it. Our lease encompasses the second floor of that building where above the restaurant. We make use of by a separate commercial lease slips in front of the boatyard and storage within the boatyard itself. But a typical day, to give you a sense of what really goes on there. Boats that a private company will bring in for its testing, called USVs, unmanned surface vessels, and they're typically in the maybe 20 to 30 foot range. And so they can get trailered in. So the company comes to town, it trails in the boats on a Monday morning, and they go to the boat launch ramp. They get the boats in the water, stop at the fuel dock, get topped up, and then go over to the slips by the boatyard. Then the rest of the day on a typical Monday is spent just getting all the gear checked out, getting briefings from between the crews, the boat operator's crews and our crews, which are the support boats that go out along with it. Then bright and early on a Tuesday morning, everybody will gather there at the office, have a little briefing session for an hour to cover exactly what's going to happen that day, any particular specific details to be aware of based on weather, anything else, all the safety procedures, all the communications, protocols, all gets covered every morning. After that, then the guys get into their boats, our guys get into our support boats, and off they go out the mouth of the harbor, out to the operations box that I put on the earlier slide. It's a long day, 10, 12 hours all told, so they're out on the water maybe 9 or 10 hours of that, depending on the weather, and they conduct all their testing, their go through their drills, break a few things, you know, whatever happens on any given day. At the end of the day, kind of reverse the process, come back in, and the boats are tied up in the slips for overnight storage, go back up in the office, get an after-action briefing on what went right and what went wrong that day, any changes for the next day, and then the next day we go over and over again. So that's a typical Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. And then on a Friday, they might or might not do that again. At least our current client who's in there now tries to keep their operations to a Monday through Thursday window. But if anything lags, if something special comes up, if there's any kind of surprise and they need to do a little more work on a Friday, that's what Friday's for. And then they're off for the weekend. The next week, it starts all over again. Our client, who has been in place since the 1st of April at the Dockworks facility, is there currently on a six-month contract, which runs through the end of September. However, they're on the verge of agreeing with us to an extension of their contract with us, which would match our contract with Suntex. In other words, they would take the full two certain years of activity within the harbor because they love it so much. Frankly, it's a wonderful setup for the companies. They're making great use of their time. They're spending money here. You know, the town director gets $17,000 a month in storage costs in his boatyard. They're filling up their boats with fuel every week. We're collecting rent from them, which we pay percentage rent on to use. So, I mean, there's business being done here every day and every week. And it looks like that will continue on for the next year and a half with this particular customer. Our grand plan, of course, is to be available to any company that needs our service and wants to be here. At the moment, we're a little constrained by the fact that where we are now is the only facilities that we've got control of. So we're kind of looking at ways that we might be able to reach out to get control of some other slips so we can work with more than one company at a time. But in any event, that's what we do. That's what FathomWorks Proving Ground is all about. To try and help these companies perfect their technologies so that they can then move on to sort of greater pastures for their own business and hopefully for the betterment of whatever the community is that needs their new and better mousetrap, so to speak. Go ahead, Jessica, I think we can kind of skip to these now just to show you. Go ahead, Challenge Harbor. That's where we operated last year. There was a big Navy exercise off of Point Magoo, and because Channel Islands Harbor was so much closer to there, that's what we used, and what I just described to you is what went on last year at Channel Islands Harbor. But that's another possible future location. Okay. And then, fairgrounds, we don't have anything in place, but we are talking with the fairgrounds about getting a license for some area that's close to the water there, and that would be for the purpose of supporting drone launching. Once in some place close to the water that doesn't have a lot of people that you have to fly over to get out into the open water, fairgrounds is a great spot for that, and they're interested, so that might be another addition to our facilities. Okay? And then I just kind of went through this just to give you a sense of what the weekly deal is, and I think that's it. Righto. I'm handicapped tonight by not having Todd, who's our operations manager, and he's got, you really notice the nitty gritty of it, but I think I've given you a sense of what ITC is all about in terms of what we're doing here in the harbor and what we're looking forward to in the next many months. Certainly open to your questions and would like to know particularly what concerns you might have about our operations.
Yeah, I think well, I appreciate, Steve, appreciate you being here tonight, appreciate all that background on ITC. I think there's probably a lot of questions here, so let's just jump to that. Remind me, please, commissioners, to come back to public comments, but I want to take advantage of Steve standing up there. And Bill, you want to start us off?
Yeah, hi. Steve, Bill Harrison, thank you. So I've got a few questions, and I'm hoping you can clarify. So my questions mostly center around your I think you're calling it op box. On your website, you say op area, which I assume is the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Jessica, can we go to that chart that showed the picture of the ocean?
So I'm just looking for some clarity.
One, keep going.
One more?
Sorry.
Keep going.
Yep.
So for that op box that you have marked there, tell me what your expectations are in terms of exclusivity, if you will. In other words, are you suggesting that you have exclusive rights to that area, or are you giving a notional area where you would operate but still do so?
We do so in full recognition of the basic rules of the road, so to speak, for marine craft. In other words, there are no barriers, and we understand that other casual boats, whether commercial fishermen or just day boaters, may well transit the area. So there are procedures set up to try and work with the individuals that may come through the area. I mean, typically it involves communicating with the boat operator, see if it's amenable to them to reroute them around our area. If it's not, then we work with them to make sure that they can get through the area without any threat to themselves for the operations. I mean, operations may just need to close down for whatever period of time it may take for the occasional boat to get through. But it's definitely, we make no exclusive claim to that water.
Okay. I'm also asking, I saw on your website you got mention of under your Site 1 op area, maritime ops, you say no permitting is needed for private institutions. What are you meaning by that? I didn't quite understand that.
Not sure I do either.
Okay. Well,
we take it out of the website there.
Yeah, it's on your website. It's you got like different sections of the site. One is Site 01 op area, maritime ops. And you look in there, it's got a statement that says no permitting is needed for private institutions. So that begs for me a lot of questions, because I mean, one case you're saying you're non-profit, but then you talk about a public offshore operating area. So I just want to make sure I'm clear how you're viewing that.
Yeah, I think the no permit needed comment refers to the fact that we recognize that there's no permit needed from any institution or any governing body to just go out on the water. that the water traffic itself is not governed in the same sense that the airspace is. The FAA has a very tight grip on who goes into the air and under what conditions. But I guess the Coast Guard would be the closest we would think of as an analogous sort of regulatory agency. And at the moment, the Coast Guard doesn't have that kind of approach. We've been starting some conversations with them, just anticipating that someday there's going to be that sort of surface regulation, just like FAA, but at the moment, there's not.
And then the other question I have is, as you look at this, I'll call it a map, not a chart, but if you look at this upbox, have you looked at this in consideration of the proposed site for the aquaculture hatchery?
Well, to a certain extent. And that extent is that both Brian and John Higgins have had conversations with me about the background of that interest and how extensive it is and how important it seems to be to the port. I've tried to reach out to the owner, I guess, or the local representative. I'm not sure what his status is. We haven't connected yet, but it's certainly my intent to have exactly that conversation, to learn specifically what they do and what the potential confliction points are, if any, and work to eliminate those before they arrive.
Right. So I guess my two cents, I'm hopeful that can be done, and I don't see why it can't, but there is a outlined proposed area for the hatchery that with a 25-square nautical mile box that's expandable very well without looking at the two could have a conflict, especially with the 20 to, or 30 to 200-foot depth, I think you're saying, for your UUVs.
Mm-hmm. Understood. The UUVs, that's very much more of a work in progress than the surface vessels. Mm-hmm. They're out there now. The UUVs are basically for the future. It may get more complicated, but to me the process is still the same. We've got to learn what they've got, what the potential threats are from our operations, if any, and then once we know what those threats are, then we work to do something different.
Okay. So, again, on that hatchery area, if you can't get that, please work with Brian or us, because that is, I've seen it outlined on a similar map, I'll call it. My hope that you work in a compatible way.
I'm a little sensitive about that.
Okay, thank you.
I appreciate the sensitivity to the aquaculture. I'm just going to change the vocabulary a little bit. We're not hatching anything. current direction probably would, the leading candidate right now, ocean rainforest, would be kelp. And so we're facilitating kelp growth and harvesting kelp in that area. But Commissioner Anderson's concern is valid. If that goes forward, there could be fixed anchors, fixed buoy systems, fixed lines. Certainly would be there'd be a conflict in the water column, on the surface and under the water column. So that needs to be worked out. Right? So.
And I would add to that as I see our vision go forward, what I broadly call blue economy, that I think what you're doing or want to do ultimately could have a role in that as well. I'm just looking for a cohesive strategy that allows both to be rich in supporting the harbor.
Great outlook. Okay.
Clarification, are you a innovation technology incubator that you're trying to develop technology in water space?
No, I wouldn't say we're an incubator. Because our intention is to deal with existing companies who themselves may be incubating products of their own. But typically you think of an incubator as a little tiny little ecosystem that tries to stimulate the creation of new businesses. And that's not our game. We're working with existing business, trying to help them expand their portfolios of products.
What's your relationship with the Oxnard Harbor District?
Well, really none. Certainly no formal connection. We haven't had any operations in that harbor. We do, the name Fathomworks is in our name, Fathomworks Proving Ground. And there is a Fathomworks lab, which is located on the Navy base. We have some connections with that laboratory in the sense that a company will go to the lab with the product, and then once they're done tinkering there, then we're available for them to move to the proving ground and test out what they just built in the lab. And the port is a partner in that laboratory. So that's a kind of a tenuous relationship, but we're all aware of each other anyhow and what each is doing.
So if you were to expand or do something with the Ventura County Fairgrounds and that little box up there, what, in terms of the relationship with the Ventura Harbor District, are you envisioning? Would it be cooperation in us informing our customers or anything to utilize you or what?
I think there would be two different components of the overall network. In other words, the fairgrounds is really focused on the potential for drone operations, nothing maritime related there at all. And here we're focused on maritime and boat traffic. So, we want to be able to offer different facilities to different companies based upon what their own needs are. So we might well work with somebody here who would never be interested in setting foot on the fairgrounds, because they don't need it, and could be vice versa as well. But having said that, I think we would want to make sure that you're aware of what our operations have expanded to if we're then in the fairgrounds, just as we want the fair board to know about what we're doing here and wherever else. The communication and consistency of and linkage of knowledge and understanding, that's a big part of our whole philosophy.
Okay. Do you have any relationship with Port of Wyoming?
The Port of Wyoming, that is the Oxnard Harbor District.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, the formal, not just the harbor.
Channel Islands Harbor District.
Okay, I'm sorry, Channel Islands.
Oh, Channel Islands.
Yeah, so you have Oxnard Harbor District that owns and operates the Port of Wyoming, and then you've got Channel Islands Harbor, which is operated by the County of Ventura.
Right. And we did have a relationship last year. That's where we ran boats all summer long there. And we still have a license there, but haven't had any need for it this year. But we stay in touch. We want to still be a friend over there.
And if I could just jump in, just a point of clarification, correct me if I got this wrong. Yeah, I thought I heard you say Fathomworks is on the Navy base. As my understanding, I've been there, it's actually in the port district,
yeah.
not the commercial past the, I would say, customs immigration zone. No, it's not on the Navy base.
You're absolutely right. Yeah, there is. I mean, I always think of the port as being leased property from the Navy, but in terms of a boundary, you can get to the Fathomworks lab without having to go through Navy security. You're right.
In some ways, it's harder to get to that lab than it is through the Navy base security, which I found.
Steve, welcome, and thank you for this, bringing us up to speed on. I do have some of the same concerns about your scannable box, but I also recognize that's not our jurisdiction whatsoever. Obviously, our interest is making sure that everybody who operates from and in this harbor transits our channels cooperates and gets along. So, and I'm certain that you'll be working on that. The only other question I had was on a chart a few or map a few later after this of the harbor, you had a UAV launch TBD that it looks like it was pointing to our parcel 8, and I was wondering what your thoughts are on that.
Parcel 8 is.
At the end of the peninsula. Here we go on this diagram.
Right. That may be just an idea on our part. I'm not sure. I mean, we haven't really pursued it in depth with you all. It has the surface appeal of being an open, vacant piece of land that's right on the water, and you know, could be great, but.
Okay, so obviously something you'd come back to a store if you thought you had plans you wanted to develop on it.
Sure, of course.
And I suspect that'd be right for a license agreement of some sort, so you would work that with
it. Yeah, it's typically right. How we would approach something like that would be through license.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, let me echo the vice chair's welcome to the Port District, kind of belated. I know you signed up with the directors, I think you said last March, so... Very good fit from what the vision that Tom Director painted for us years ago of he wanted to be an innovative boatyard, bring new technologies to Ventura. So glad to see you're helping to foster that vision. I suspect Suntex is going to be a good landlord for you. Wish you well there. Wish you growth.
So we have great experience with them in Channel Island.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. Most of their money is there.
Yeah, I understand. They're a big corporation, and we're excited about what they're going to bring to Ventura. What way of background? Commissioner Anderson and I, 20 years in the Navy, serving the Navy, 20 years since then, serving the Navy. Specifically for me, I was over in Port Hueneme working Navy research. So the idea of what you're supporting, what you're trying to enable, great stuff, the nation needs it. You look at geopolitical across the globe, the United States needs to get more into unmanned surface, unmanned undersea. It's critical for our future protection. So what you're doing is important, and I appreciate that. And I'm excited that you're here and been to Ventura Harbor to help that out. I do share the vice chair's concern and Bill's concerns. Jessica, if we go back to that map shown in Ventura. You know, that area, right, we did a lot of studies. We, the Port District, did a lot of studies. Not a lot of fishing, but some fishing, right? A lot of transits, could be oil rig transits, could be recreational. How are you getting the word out? Are you doing notice to mariners or something? You got to get the word out to people. So
right. I know we do notice to mariners. And there may be others that the operations guys handle that I'm not aware of, but... Notice to Mariners is probably the only outlet that I know of that gets broad distribution across the board.
Yeah. I would think especially the fishermen, if they're not given notice that there's a restriction in that area, even a temporary one, they're not going to react well. So, and the goal of not surprising anybody and making sure that we have continued uses in the future, we got to do a good job of communicating.
Right. I will say... Use the word restrictions in there, and I don't believe we word our notices in the note mark to say there is a restricted area. I think it's more notice that says these activities will be taking place within areas bounded by limited ordinance, but there's no message of saying stay out.
My personal experience is I was asked to reroute my course to stay out of an area. So I don't know if that was a fathom work exercise, but it was definitely by a defense contractor operating out there in that area. So I think that's the kind of stuff we just got to be careful about, especially if we're talking about fishermen and their livelihood, et cetera.
Understood. Yep. Well, let's see. A couple of comments about that. Number one, it's always a learning experience. That's why there are after-action hot wash briefings and all those. This is what happened today, and this is how we got to handle it better next time. And I believe that probably happened with respect to your situation. If there was some tension there, then we didn't handle it right. But I would also
there was no tension, but there could have been given a different voter.
Okay, I understand. I think, as I said before, in describing what goes on out there, I think our intent would be to approach a voter to say, is it possible for you to reroute, or is it, would it be within your comfort realm to do that? Because it might be. You know, somebody out for a day sale, they're just going wherever. And if they say, you know what, I've got to be up in Santa Barbara in an hour and a half, then I've got to get the straight line route. And we treat that differently.
Right. So we're just encouraging you to figure out how to get that notification out there in advance, so people, if they see it in advance and they know about it, they're going to hopefully avoid the area, avoid the conflict.
Right.
Let me just, in closing, let me just echo Commissioner Rennie's statement of, you know, we're glad you're here. How can we help? Right. So let us know. Let the staff know. Again, I think from a my background perspective, excited about what you guys are trying to enable. Glad to hear that Suntex has been a good host. I know the Harbor Master and his team have helped you out. So glad to hear we've been good so far. Just please feel free to reach out to the general manager. Let us know how we can help and how we can enable the development of this critical technology.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the sentiments, and it certainly is true that our experience so far, I think I first started talking to Brian last fall, probably, about this, and consistently with Brian, and then more recently had a couple of conversations with Mr. Higgins. And you all have been forthcoming and accommodating and positive and trying to find ways to make it work. I can't ask for anything more than that, so thank you, and thank you to all of you.
If your contractors, the teams you're working with, got any hardware to show off, I'd love to see it. I've caught a couple of UUVs sitting in the harbor and piqued my interest. So, before I let you go, let me ask for any public comments.
I think Chief Higgins would like to.
All right, Chief, all yours.
Yeah. Wish I could have gotten before he gave that, because I probably would have been able to answer a lot of your questions. So the reason why he's here tonight is exactly for the reason of introducing the concept in a public forum so the information starts to get out there. We've already talked about ways that they could do some type of messaging that is not, you know, something that would concern the public. These are not weaponized military things. These are things that can be useful in maritime industry all around. This is also still very new. It's part of some of the stuff that I've learned by going to that regional defense partnership. On that side, they're really pushing fast, fast, fast. On this side, it's slowly evolving, so some of that stuff up there, including that TBD, the contractor reached out to me and I said, okay, I'm not the person that can answer that. You need to get in touch with Brian and Todd to come up with whether it could be done or not. From the beginning and even before they got going, they did reach out to us, and both of us have agreed that I'm kind of the quality control person and really looking after the interest of the voters more so than their business. So while they're here, they're a partner, but no way are they going to interfere with the daily operations. So from the beginning, things we established best practices, so when they're taking the vessels out of the harbor and into the harbor, that they respect the outrigger paddlers, you know, the sabots, commercial fishing vessels. We instituted a very strict process where that no one boat has more than two of those autonomous vessels that are actually being remotely controlled. There is no autonomous activity within the harbor. That is something that we were both in agreement that would not occur for quality control. Not till they get outside the harbor, I think it's about a half mile or a mile, they will stop, do their testing, and then at that point they'll determine whether they do the autonomous out to that particular area. The 5x5 box, I have given them the exact coordinates of where the aquaculture project is, along with the website that got more into detail about aquaculture, and then I even forwarded them the navigational study that we did, because I think it would have value to them in their program by seeing what information we were able to gather as they look in the future. Todd, who you referenced, is a fellow public safety person who's been in this county for a number of years, and he's been involved in more of the aerial stuff, which for a number of years, but he's been part of that Port of Hueneme and the Oxnard Harbor District's Coastal Trident exercise, which was a small security exercise that was a requirement. And 20 years ago, it was just a localized thing. But in doing that, they realized that they could share technology and bring in some of these companies to help add value to the military, but also become kind of a testing ground. That small exercise is now covering the United States, and it has grown significantly. So in the Regional Defense Partnership, there's the Fathomworks, that's kind of that more akin to the incubator. There's the Aerial 805 in Camrio Airport, which is a county program that's looking to institute I believe, an aerial component akin to this maritime thing. That's in progress, and they've already, I think, achieved some permitting with FAA to do offshore testing, civilian versions of offshore testing akin to the military side. So those will all start to kind of come together and be more, open and apparent as they're learning and gathering. One of the things that I'm also doing here is looking after the interest of the public. And so one of the things that we spoke to initially really quick was the fact that they were using the public launch ramp for their launching of those and trying to determine whether that was in violation of our Department of Boating Waterway contract that specifically says no commercial activity. They were able to get permission from the Director of Boating Waterways to use Channel Islands Harbor, and they were able to share with me that communications. I still plan to reach out to her just to cover everything and say, hey, I'm looking at this particular wording, and we just want assurance that we're not going to be in violation of our contract and our agreements with you, because the Department of Boating Waterways has given us millions of dollars over the years. So in addition to that, they have my number. I have their number. I can go over to their place, and technically the second floor is supposed to be a restricted area. However, the contractor has told the staff, part of his staff, that anything that I need or any access I need, I'm able to go up there. Some of the safety controls that if you were going to that 5x5 box and you didn't have your radio on because you're not required to have a radio by the Coast Guard. You may not have heard. They're trained that their default system is everything goes dead in the water if it poses any kind of hazard. But more importantly, I think the message we really need to get to the public is nothing out there is weaponized, and nothing out there poses a threat to the public. It is a testing field by definition. Testing has value to the community as well as the military. So I think that they've been really good partners from the beginning. The fact that, that they're here is because they've talked to Brian multiple times now and myself and are interested in how to be better partners. And so that's one of the things that, that I've encouraged, and I think that we've encouraged them, is that come to the harbor, be a partner, and you know, if any of these big companies wanted to donate money to a potential park in the future, I don't know. I mean, we've been talking about funding opportunities, and you know, who knows? Sometimes there's people like to donate. But sorry, that was inside joke there. But actually, I just want to assure you guys that there is very good communication lines and a lot of the things that you guys have talked about, including that immediately after I heard your situation, I reached out to them and communicated with them so that they were able to talk to the people that are out there running that. And I doubt that that would happen again. And if it does, let me know, because that is not what they're trying to accomplish. They're trying to accomplish being respectful and being able to operate successfully, as opposed to having conflict and losing that, especially sort of.
Good. Thanks, Chief. Thanks for that clarification. All right. Any other public comments in the room? Seeing none, how about online? No public comments online. All right, we'll close public comments. And this was an informational item for the board. Steve, again, thank you for coming out and giving us all that background. Brian, we're done for the night. Our next meeting is July 15th. And again, the vice chair and myself, Brian and Todd, will be going to City Council next Tuesday.
Next Tuesday, the 7th? Mm-hmm. Is that right? The 7th. Yeah. And then, as you heard from Robert, we'll be prepared to provide testimony at the Coast Commission meeting on Wednesday the 8th.
On the 8th, right. We don't have a time, but we do know we're on the agenda for the 8th.
Correct.
So, okay. And I think we're both planning to be there with him. All right. Very good. Well, we will adjourn for the evening. Thank you, everybody.